welcome to B-Movie Buddies.
We watch them so you don't fucking have to.
My name is Crow.
And I'm Birdie.
And this is our new podcast. We decided to start this because in our friend group we have a real affinity for watching...
For poor movies.
Watching shitty-ass B-run movies. And riff on them and laugh our asses off while we do it.
We think we're funny.
Yeah, so we figured, like, in an effort to do that more often...
Like we need an excuse to watch these movies, though.
Right?
But yeah.
And yet, here we are. So, what we're going to do is, this is going to be, we're going to aim for a fortnightly thing. You know,
please don't hold us to that.
It's real life, people. Real life takes a hold, it always happens. We both work.
You're all angst.
it's a podcast. It's our first podcast. It's our first baby. So we're going to try real hard to learn the ropes, learn how to edit, get it out and stuff.
What he means is we don't know what we're doing here.
Not a fucking clue.
But, if we sound like we're ripping people off, we're not trying to.
We probably are at the same time.
Sorry, everyone.
So the plan is we sit down, we watch a movie and take notes over the hour and a half, 2 hours. We'll
hope we can make it to the end.
Goddamn right. And, come back to you guys immediately after and share our pain with you, the audience.
Yeah.
At this point, probably just, like, the 6 people we know who will actually listen.
The people we force-feed this on. Just like, please listen to our podcast.
Yeah.
So for this very first one, our inaugural podcast, we decided to watch Mutant Chronicles. It came out in 2008, starring Ron Perlman and a bunch of fuck-all other actors that nobody's ever seen again.
To lay the foundation for this, we found this movie by my dad coming in saying, like, "Oh, I bought this Ron Perlman movie the other day. What'd you think of it?" "I bought this Ron Perlman movie the other day. It belongs to you now, Crow."
So that's, like your dad called you Crow, by the way. It's not a shining recommendation to begin with.
Yeah.
But we're dedicated to this.
Yeah.
So we'll watch it.
And look, like, I'll go on record. It's not terrible.
It's not terrible.
There's definitely a story there.
There's some stuff that happens.
Yeah. Ron Perlman's definitely in it. You know. Definitely came out on DVD.
Gotta wonder why Ron Perlman ended up in this movie.
Well, see, this is early career Perlman. So, like,
the man's ancient.
Yeah,
at least
but
he's
always
ancient.
Been ancient.
Sons of Anarchy would have been going by this point, right? Like a couple seasons in.
I wouldn't have
a
clue. This is the kind of stuff we should research before we start recording.
No, we're in too deep.
We're in too...
moving right along.
He's always looked like Ron
Ancient.
Perlman. That's the nicest thing you can say there.
He looks old as fuck.
He looks old as fuck. So let's start talking about the movie. Mutant Chronicles is about a futuristic?
Well, yeah, it says it's in the future, but it looks like World War One and Two London a lot.
Yeah, so it's set in this Earth timeline where this big ass machine falls from Earth with the only goal of being a gigantic dick.
The oddly specific target of turning everyone else into mutants. They didn't come to conquer. Well, they did. They didn't come to take all our resources.
Conquering is a happy bonus.
Yeah, you meant you survived the mutant onslaught, apparently.
Ron Perlman gives the exposition at the start of the film, and he just says, "It came from the stars with one girl to transform all into mutants."
Thanks, Ron Perlman.
Thanks. You really helped me out. So what do the humans do about this gigantic thing that's making people mutants from the stars?
They get fucked.
More to the point, they just bury it underground. They're like, it'll be future Earth's problem.
After the legendary, like, hero of his order, Nuk-Tuk. No, it's not Nuk-Tuk. That's something from Korra.
But he's really close to Nuk-Tuk.
I think it's Nuk-Tan.
I wrote it down later on. Well, you're going to just get used to hearing many characters go by at least 3 different names. Like, Ron Perlman's character has a character, but most of the time we'll be referring to him as Ron Perlman or Hellboy.
Or Clay.
So, yeah, there's this...
So Nuk-Tuk, unites the clans of Earth, and they fight back and defeat the mutants and seal their big mutant-making machine underground.
Beneath the Earth.
Which seems like an alarmingly short-sighted plan.
Yeah.
But we're moving right along.
It's like when you get drunk and it's like, future Crow can deal with this.
It's and like, then future Crow has to deal with it, and it's a goddamn clusterfuck.
It's a tits-up clusterfuck. So then people stop caring about the machine, and it becomes a myth. Like, no one is aware.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that nearly wiped out existence.
Just forgotten.
It literally and figuratively swept under the rug.
So, we jump from that one, and it's... Is it...
Flash forward to 2027.
The distant future, folks.
The distant
It's 12
year,
years away, guys.
The distant year where World War One happens.
And Earth is no longer divided into countries and governments,
nope.
But warring corporations that are fighting for all the resources that are left.
Just like any good future should be. So we flash forward to 2027, and we're in the World War One fucking...
Future war.
Yeah, future war. Bunker. And you got all your standards. You've got the cheeky sergeant. Who's outranks everyone and is confident enough in that he can act like a total dick all the time.
Is this the American?
No, the British dude.
British guy. I liked him.
Yeah, he's a good... I'm not saying he's a bad guy.
Classic,
I'm just saying, like...
Classic, hard-boiled, yeah. Sassy British man that's in charge.
Classic war is hell. Like, I've seen it all, kid.
Yeah, except that he's British, so I've seen it all.
Let's not start.
That's good. Yeah. That's a slippery slope.
Yeah. We start in this British bunker, and then the camera pans across the war field to the other end, and it's an old-timey steam war, so the bad guys have got to be German.
Yes.
It's just how it happens, unfortunately. So yeah, we got camera pans around. I in the first 30, like minute 30, I reckon, I saw four dudes give, like, direct down the camera 1,000-yard stares. like, I've seen it all. The corporations, man.
Fighting for the corporations.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
On we go. It's quite literally World War One era trench warfare.
Mm.
Despite the fact we find out later that they have airships and dropships and all that kind of shit.
Airships and dropships that are more than happy to float at basically ground level over a war zone.
Yeah, it's jumping ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
It's how they get out of this scene to begin with, or to end with. So why?
Get it, man. War is hell.
why are they in trenches? I don't get it.
That's warfare. So then we meet our hero, the only American in a British camp of soldiers.
He is... American as fuck.
He's the all-American American.
He's John McClane.
He's the John McClane.
Right out of Die Hard, but British, it's not Bruce Willis.
The British country John McClane, who by default is American.
Yeah.
And then I really like this bit in the trenches for just a minute or so. We meet the cheekiest padre going around.
Fucking Pereira.
Yeah. No. Padre, like, religious
thing.
Oh,
that, yeah.
Yeah, it's how we meet Pereira. So
that's right.
Pereira's...
This sassy bitch.
Pereira's a slippery salamander, and we'll get to him later. But this Padre dude comes up to Pereira, and he's like, hits him in the face with the holy water. Then he goes up to the sergeant, and he asks the sergeant whether or not he wants the blessing. So it's like... Even the padre knows that this dude is a shitbag.
You don't fuck with this one American in this camp.
No, more to the point, like, the Spanish dude, he's like, I'm not even going to waste my time, just...
like, cop it.
Yeah,
take it all, you dirty whore.
Yeah.
Just a quick side note on the sets on this part. That remind you of Blackadder at all?
Yeah.
Like that weird one set in the war.
Yeah.
Which is like... Where's Hugh Laurie? When's Hugh Laurie getting here? But he didn't show up, folks.
Yeah.
That's why we hated this movie.
So then war keeps being hell, and the Germans march forward to the enemy camp, and only the characters integral to the storyline...
Now get scene time, yeah.
Not only do they get scene time, when the Germans throw smoke grenades over,
it's just them.
The only people competent enough to get their masks
on
are integral to the storyline.
And then we jump on to the Germans' big fucking rail gun, the thing that's like on a tank, but I think it's like an airplane as well, kind of deal. And they just, you know, fire this thing off. They're not really aiming very well because they appear to hit the land in the direction from which they first made their charge.
Are you sure the British didn't have that gun? Because I thought the British dude was shooting at the tanks.
I don't know, Matt, lots
of big guns in this movie.
Yeah, lots of big guns. It's kind of confusing. Maybe I just felt like blaming the Germans for something else.
Whoa. What do you mean something else,
Bertie? In this movie, I mean.
Yeah. Because
they're already the bad guys in this war, apparently.
Meanwhile, all this is happening.
Shit goes down. Something blows up.
Big asshole appears in the middle of the battlefield.
Just
like so to put it in perspective, left to right, you've got three things on a stretch of land. You've got the British trenches, the German trenches where they came from, and then like another couple of yards back, big ol' hole that has started to rumble and shake since the war started. Bang, 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 bang. Hole gets a bit bigger. Boom, crash, cow. Hole gets a bit bigger. Suddenly we notice this hole, like, opens and it's got a big-ass staircase inside it.
It's like, yeah, it's like a spiral.
Spiraled, yeah. Like something's drilled into the earth.
And, of course, out come the mutants. Eventually.
Like
they've been waiting on the other side for this thing to break open forever.
And these Germans have been advancing for the whole opening scene. As soon as that hole opens, mutants are everywhere. Everywhere. They've come, so, like, right to left now, they've come out of the hole, through the German trenches, and now causing havoc in the English trenches. And then, like, so this all happens, and then, dead silence.
Alien.
The movie becomes Alien. There's fog everywhere, for some reason.
Fog of war.
And the camera slowly pans around, and we see German and British being pulled off Wilhelm Scream style in every direction. Until we just see our main American English dude and our main German dude in some kind of Mexican standoff knife fight.
No, there's some more people getting killed by mutants before they find each other, right? Because they see each other and they instantly assume that the other one let out the mutants.
Done. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so there's like, you know, I think the commander, the British guy, our new favorite British soldier, fights off at least one, and then
they meet each other. The remaining soldiers surround them while they're having a fight,
and it's a full fucking Mexican standoff in the middle of a war zone, in which there was literally like thousands of people fighting this war. Now we're down to about nine people, not enough to fit in the one scene.
Yeah, and in that scene, nine quickly becomes three because you see this a lot in this movie. The mutants have an affinity for stabbing dudes through the shoulders. And I just like to clarify, it's not mutant in the traditional sense. A mutant in this movie means your face gets all messed up, you get a jacked up face, and you get a blade for an arm. That's a mutant.
Yeah, it's not the worst mutant.
No, it's, well, like, mutants, the idea is it's all different.
Different.
But yeah, these dudes, there's a uniform, a mutant form.
Yeah.
Yep, made that joke. So yeah, this scene just wraps up with the quirky British sergeant.
The classic, I'll man the gun or you'll get away.
I'll go down with the ship. Like, jumps on the rail gun, starts firing off at mutants. And as far as we know, he's dead. That's it. Note to self, he could easily have made it to the cargo ship.
Yeah, he kind of got himself enough space. There was no one coming at him.
Cut to the monastery.
In which we see a small child interrupt a fairly important ceremony.
And that small child is doing nothing but get to the monastery. He has to sidestep and hug a fucking mountain to get to the front door of the monastery.
I like that the news that he delivers is so important that he goes up the mountain and interrupts mass, but it's not apparently so important that they send a grown-ass adult with the message instead.
No.
It's got to be a kid.
This kid's lighting his feet. Get up the mountain to the monastery.
What? Yeah. So, and who does it deliver the message to? None other than motherfucking Ron
Hellboy.
Perlman.
Ron Perlman in a big old weird, like, robe. And this is the robe that Ron Perlman spends 100% of the movie in.
Yeah.
It's a cult robe. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He's in a cult robe.
I don't think he even cleans it.
No.
Just sweats in it.
It's not an astronaut suit, Ron. You can't pin poop in there.
So, Kid delivers his message, and Perlman immediately drops everything he's doing, heads straight down into the dungeons to consult the wisdom of the scrolls. It's a book.
It's a weird book. So it's a book in a conventional sense, but you open it up.
It's not conventional.
And to the untrained eye, from the outside, it's a big ass red tome.
What are you saying about my eye?
I'm saying it's untrained.
In the eye.
Big ass books. When's the last time you read a book? So you open this book up and there's two books. So there's like a binder on each side. So you open it up and you're looking at four pages. So to connect things, you have to have both books turned to the same pages. What happens when you shut the book? Do you have to shut both the books before you shut the book? It's
yes.
A clusterfuck. I'm sorry, but that bugged me the entire time.
Look,
because later on in the movie, spoiler alert, if you're going to watch Mutant Chronicles,
if you're listening to this and you haven't watched Mutant Chronicles,
which I personally think is unheard of.
Look, we're putting it now. We probably should have put it at the start, but fucking spoilers.
Yeah. they carry this book around for like the whole movie. And there's scenes where he's got it in one arm and he's flicking through it and flicking through two books. I don't know. It's dumb. It's the sake of looking churchy.
It's just, it's so it looks old and...
It's something straight out of, dare I say it, Hellboy. It wouldn't look out of place in those films.
Someone at home, count how many Hellboy references Crowley makes.
Good movies.
Maybe we'll get to them later. They are good movies.
Yeah.
There should be a third one.
So, back to it. Ron Perlman's consulting the book in his weird table that has swords in it.
Jump to a Perlman monologue that literally rehashes the opening monologue.
Yeah,
we don't learn anything new in this.
The first half hour of this movie is reiterating how boned the world is.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And, Perlman starts his speech about, the mutants being the enemy of man.
Yeah, we get to see some close-ups of people becoming mutants and
stuff.
Yeah,
and over the course of his monologue, the world goes to shit fast.
They just reiterate how there's four corporations, and they all fell to the mutants, and the world just looks like a pitiful war zone. Meanwhile,
apparently it looks like nobody offered any resistance whatsoever.
Nope. Everyone's fleeing to Mars. Yeah, so then he's telling this...
space travel, they're fighting in trenches. Right? Fuck off.
He's telling all these elders who this is D-Day, this is day one of the rest of their lives. Elders look immediately completely defeated.
Oh, we're under the Council of Elrond.
Yeah.
Is that where we're at?
Yeah. So he's reading this book, right? It is a very specific problem that has one passage written about it. There's one book that Ronnie has that explains everything.
Nobody listens to the guy with the book.
No one listens to the guy with the book. Is literally the only problem, and there is one book, and no one gives a rat's about what crazy old churchy Ron Perlman's spewing out the back. He's pleading with the company people, give me a team of people.
The president of the council, by the way, is played by John Malkovich in this movie for some reason also.
Most of the stuff in this movie can be summed up with for some reason also.
Yes.
So they won't give him the things that the book... that says how to win this particular problem.
No, they're all like, nah, we're humanity's done. We're fucking off to Mars.
Yeah, peace out to Mars.
And there's some scenes showing the mayhem in the streets.
Yeah, there's this weird Titanic-ass scene where a mum drops her... She's got her tickets to Mars and they're only letting people with tickets onto the plane. She got two tickets, one for her and one for her Bruce Wayne-ass son. And they run up the steps... And they're stopped by soldiers, and she's like, oh, I've got the tickets. She pulls out the envelopes. No tickets. And then...
They take the kid anyway.
They take the kid, which is cool. Good on you.
Yeah,
But you don't necessarily need this information.
No, it's... Because, we see that, and then straight back into the Council of Elrond with John Malkovich talking some more.
Not to cut you off there too much, Bertie. So the kid gets on the plane, and then the fucking plane explodes. And the mum has to watch it.
Well, I was totally not watching that part. Whoops.
One of the negatives of writing while you watch a movie.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, they just... I don't know. And then, back to John Malkovich.
who conveniently drops the knowledge that he's not well enough to make space travel or to survive space travel, which is why he's going to stay on Earth.
We see a lot in this movie of captains going down with the ships. It happens a few times.
Not a bad concept. It's honorable. Yeah. But anyway, so Malkovich says he's too sick to travel. Some shit about redemption for his life. And he decides to give Ron Perlman, whose character, his name has just come back to me, brother Samuel.
Samuel.
Decides to give him a ship and some passes, some off-world passes to bribe people into this suicide mission.
Just like the prophecy foretold. He needs to bribe the people that Ron needs to fix the problem.
Because, you know, the fact that they're all on Earth and are fucked anyway, so they might as well help,
right,
wasn't strong enough motivation.
Yeah. Cut to Hunter going to the British guy's house to tell his dumbass wife the British guy is dead. This was, woman is thick as a brick.
There was some sexual tension in this scene. There was, you could cut that shit with a butter knife.
Like with the dude and the little girl?
No. What a creepy person do you think I am? No, the newly widowed Mrs.
See, I don't think there was. I think it was just bad acting on the widow's part.
She was just into the real guy.
Because, like, it's like, so it's after army, right? And your husband's best mate rocks up to your door. Your husband hasn't been home yet, and she says, I can't get onto the phone to find out where my husband is. Smiling, laughing, do you want a cup of tea? Invites her in.
The most British thing ever.
Right.
Have some tea.
So Mrs. Slowwife is making tea for American man. So then American man starts reading, pulls out his letter that he got from the government and says, it is my civil duty as sergeant to tell you that your husband,
Hunter.
Sergeant...
His name is Hunter.
Hunter. That's what
and
I said.
And the dead guy is Rooker. we're finally getting on top of the names here, folks.
That Rooker is dead and it's missing in action. And it's not until he says the word missing that she starts...
Hadn't put it together.
No, could not fit,
before that moment.
Could not fit the square peg in the round hole in the my husband's dead hole.
It's not. It's not even a square peg in a round hole. It's a square peg
in a square hole.
Yeah. As we mentioned earlier, Perlman, you know, he gets his ship and he gets his bribe passes. Start recruiting his team. So now is the recruitment drive scene. Begins by picking up our American British hero guy Hunter from the first war scene. Finds him in a bar, well on his way to getting shit faced because his friend is.
Can I just add, in that bar, handsomest bartender I've ever seen.
Had some nice dreadlocks.
Just beautiful dreadlocks. Just... I'd rather stop watching the movie and watch what the rest of his day was like in his tiny ass
bar.
Like pew sized bar that can barely fit like Hunter and
Ron Perlman.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so Perlman comes in. He's wearing wearing that creepy arts robe, which
sticks out like a sore thumb.
It does, because the rest of the world is just fucking grey and black and
bleak.
And this robe is just, it's so red.
In comes Perlman in his cult robe.
His little Red Riding Hood robe. And he convinces Hunter to join up by giving him his bribe passes, which we find out Hunter gives to the Rooker family and their off world.
Yeah. So that's sort of
spot on.
So then we meet the rest of the team. We meet Mr. Maguire, the all British confidant. He's just like the star pupil.
The fucking goody two shoes that refuses to accept the ticket. He just jumps on board with the mission because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Which is,
as Perlman says, the type of person we should be saving, not sending to his death.
Shut up, Perlman. Of course, our friend Pereira, who we mentioned earlier, makes the cut somehow.
He's just like, because he's at the army scene at the start, and he's just the lovable shit stirrer.
I wouldn't even call him lovable.
Lovable. No, he's just a shit stirrer. Yeah. So we meet Valerie Duval, the only woman on the team.
And, there's that other one. There's the church lady.
Oh, but she's not introduced.
Yeah,
she's the only
woman recruit, and he's a motherfucking badass by all accounts.
Yeah.
She's a sniper with
swords.
60 kills or something.
Ah, yeah. And, we find out later she's got two kids and she's really young.
Teen mother.
Yeah, yeah. We meet Jubo, who is, by all accounts, a fucking nutcase. Just, like, got some stupid, like, death count. He's one of those guys, he gets a bomb tattooed on his arm every time he kills someone and he's got two arms covered in bombs.
Cold as ice.
Yeah. And we meet Maximilian von Steiner.
AKA the most German man to ever
German. The most German man you could possibly meet. So, from this point on, we're going to start breezing through what Perlman says, because boy howdy if he doesn't reiterate himself.
And he talks a lot.
So, yeah, I've just got written on my notes here. We got a war brief, we got the Germans and the British not liking each other, butting heads, it's
there's
all...
There's their description all, about the device, yeah. The bomb, that there's a whole bunch of excuses as to why they don't know exactly why it's supposed to work.
We got this fat nerd dude with glasses who comes in to explain the plan that doesn't exist.
Fucking plan with plot holes and
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Because we're such good guys, we've summarised it for you. The plan is, we've got go underground, not through the front door hole, find a tunnel, blow up the machine, get home in time for tea.
Smoke me a kipper, I'll be back for breakfast.
And even that plan is just, we kind of think it'll work. It relies on you finding a lot of stuff underground that we can't find.
Yeah, and this my favourite note from this whole scene is that Maguire, our British goody two-shoes, is the biggest fucking sasspot ever.
Yeah.
Just questions everything.
Everything, yeah. And as a good frame of reference for this scene, there's like, I think it's three people who don't have a line pretty much for most of it. You can just tell right off the bat, those are the three people that are probably going to die in this movie.
No, well, some more spoilers, but Maguire has, like, all the lines, and he's literally the first one to go.
Yeah. Fair enough. So then we see that they've got a mutant chained up, which means literally nothing.
Of course, the Germans.
Yeah, she's got a prisoner of war.
And experimenting on prisoners of war.
But, yeah, we learn that it's a mutant. Surprise. Like, kill it.
No.
Good job. So then we have it's the night before war and we have a church party.
Yeah, we have the scene where they, everyone proceeds to get annihilated on church communion wine.
But I forgot to mention the character we mentioned before this happens, we meet Severian, who is Perlman's right-hand lady, and she is pretty much there. She's like a monk.
But like a badass one.
Yeah, she doesn't talk much, but she can swing a sword. That's what you learn. She's proper badass.
So the party's over. Perlman wakes everyone up the next day, presumably hungover as shit because they drunk
as balls.
All of the communion wine.
Yeah.
And as is always a good plan to do when you're hungover, they give them some sharp objects, which is the sword-giving ceremony.
Yeah, the dumbass sword table gets its dumbass swords.
Conveniently, there is enough swords for every member of the
team. Well, no, Perlman said he needed a team.
This scene also just reinforces that Pereira is shit.
He falls asleep during the sword giving ceremony.
He falls asleep on his feet. How do you even do that?
He's the coolest thing that's happened to him all movie. He's getting a free sword from a church.
And he falls asleep.
He passes out. So yeah, then we got our swords, we're hung over his balls. It's time to go find the hole, find the entry point, and start the mission. So we're on the plane and we just get even more context about
from
the characters.
Perlman.
From Perlman too. We learn all about all the characters, like just a bunch of cliches, like, I fought in this war, I've got a bullet for every person I killed. Ha 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 ha.
Yep, and on that flight, Wu continues to be a fucking creep.
Yeah.
Pereira's still a weirdo, and those two actually bond a little bit over their mutual disrespect of women.
Yeah, and general weirdness. So then we're just in the cockpit having a look out the front window, and we find out that there is a ship coming. Turns out the ship's piloted by mutants, because apparently mutants can pilot a ship. I don't know. But
it could be an interesting discussion. Do they keep some of their skills and abilities and memories when they get mutant fired, or is it...
I think we'll touch on that towards the end.
Slate.
Yeah. They kamikaze the ship. The ship goes down into the emergency pod. Once again, the captain of the ship goes down with his ship figuratively and literally.
Yep.
Who dies? The British guy.
Maguire.
Maguire's
the
first
down,
one to kick the bucket.
On the way down, there is still time for Wu to be a shitbag.
Yeah.
Because the first parachute doesn't work. And everyone's like, pull the fucking next one. Pull
damn
the back
it,
up. And he's like, no, wait. Wait till we're under 1,000 meters off the ground, because apparently he's a physics major now as well.
Yeah, his argument is that the parachute will break if we do it too early, just like the last one. I, for one, didn't see them do the first one.
No, it just didn't go.
Just didn't go.
So, fuck you.
So then they go
It's your fault.
So they hit the ground, and already we've got our second death.
Maguire is the first one to kick the bucket in this movie.
He cops a piece of glass through the leg on the way down. And this is the first scene where we meet the grenades in this movie.
Fucking grenades.
There's little ass grenades that look like a butt with a pin in the top.
Yeah, except for Maximilian's, which are
we'll get to later.
Yeah. We can just touch on that. They are literally just like the potato masher, like Nazi like World War grenades. II handle grenades. Nice. So, hit the ground. Maguire has glass in his leg, which means he's a liability. He can't travel. And there's some, you know, probably some emotional.
Tell
shit.
My wife I said hello. A lot of that.
Yeah, that kind of stuff that would be interesting or good if it was well written or well acted.
So
it's
Mitch
not.
Hunter gives him a grenade, gets out of the escape pod, and then cool guys don't look at explosions, walks
Boom.
Away from the pod as it explodes.
And this is like, it's a decent sized grenade explosion. It's not that big, though.
It's not that big. I personally haven't seen many grenades go off in real life.
I'm just judging movies.
Yeah.
I realise they're not accurate, folks.
So now we're walking through the city that is decorated like a goddamn milk carton, just missing persons everywhere on the walls and stuff. There's mutants in the city, and, it's an underground city, I suppose I should mention.
They're not quite underground
yet.
No, they hit the church and then they go underground from there.
This podcast is rife with plot holes, much like the movie itself.
Right, so they're heading off through the city, and Hunter, being the all-American action hero, hears some gunshots going off.
Yeah,
just popping off a couple streets over.
Just like the standard soldiers who have been away from camp too long, who have been tasked with evac.
And they're fucking it up.
They're greasy as balls. They're rather than getting everyone on the ship like they're meant to, they're
selling tickets onto the ship for
all of the people's money.
Yeah, and possessions and whatnot.
Yeah, so Hunter does the right thing, goes up and blows a cap in one of them and walks
following off. Following some rather excellent gun-related puns.
I didn't catch those.
How much do you weigh? I don't know. 351. Pulls out a fucking 351 Magnum or whatever that is.
There you go. I'm not up to date on my gun.
No, I'm not either. I'm just assuming. You know what? I've probably made a real big mistake assuming they knew what they were talking about.
Anyway.
In Mutant Chronicles.
Anyway.
Hunter kills him. Convinces everyone else to let him onto the ship, and that's Hunter being an all-action hero.
Now, onto one of my favourite scenes. I've dubbed it Elevator Madness.
Yeah, after they find their way through
the city,
the city, and then the ruined church, they go underground into the ruined church.
And they find an elevator shaft.
Yeah.
They got to get down the elevator shaft, because apparently, in Pellman's notes, there is a very specific floor they have to get to.
I think it's like 68 or something.
I don't know. It's down. They're already underground. Now they're going down an elevator shaft. This looks like it was the funnest scene to film in
Pellman
the entire movie.
Sweating up a storm.
Pellman's sweating up a storm because they've got him on hoists and they're going down the elevator cables.
Abseiling, yeah.
Yeah, they're going down. Pellman's sweating up a storm. But they're just cruising down these ropes about a minute in, so it just looks like it was a genuinely enjoyable scene to film.
But in the context of the movie, you just know shit's going to go haywire.
They're in a goddamn underground elevator shaft in a ruined church of some kind.
Yeah, I know.
It can only go well.
Yeah, because, you know,
a delightful
romp. Because no movie has ever had a scene like this go off properly.
No.
They don't just make their way through it. Yeah. Clint Sally.
So, as I said, they're slowly all getting on the cord, and Wu decides that he's going to stay up top and
play tail end and watch the hoist.
So, because it's a kind of a horror movie, we know right off the bat that Wu's boned.
Yeah,
that's it for Wu. So, like we said, because we're in a goddamn elevator shaft, we start seeing zombies down the bottom, and then we start seeing zombies up the top. So not only are the people at the bottom in danger, but the actual cable is in danger of breaking.
Cue Pearlman fucking up a simple abseil because he hits the release button on his mechanism.
Cares less about falling and more about his dumb book, catches the book and gets caught by Hunter.
Who is apparently strong enough to catch Ron Perlman in full flight.
So we're at the bottom of the hoist and then we get the comic lyric, "Don't let me go," and he drops Perlman and Perlman falls like a meter.
It's like, Although I think they make some wise crack about faith. I think it's because like he had a tiny target to land for and he hits it, but come on, man.
So then, we got mutants down the bottom, we got mutants up the top, and Pellman's actually doing an okay job of defending himself, against the mutant. But gosh darn, if Mr. Von German Man decides that he wants to
light everything up,
he's in too deep, and he pulls out his potato masher grenade, which is the only one of its kind we see in the entire movie, and drops it on Perlman's head. And then luckily that cool-ass monk chick
catches it
mid-flight and disposes of it.
Drops and lands and
yeah,
some physics bending throws,
some Matrix stuff. Yeah,
and in time. And it's beautiful and it kills a whole bunch of zombies, mutants, whatever they are.
Yeah, and then we all get down the elevator shaft, and then we all get down the elevator shaft. And Ron Perlman exists in this movie only as Ron Perlman, Lord of Exposition. He starts, like, you think, like, we're finally out of the woods of Perlman talking over scene. And boy howdy if he doesn't pull out his book and just start tearing ass through those pages.
Obviously, it's not as easy to find as he would have thought.
So then, like, we get all this exposition, which turns out to be for nothing. Because we're getting close-ups of the book and it's like, here's where to go, here's where to go. And then Hunter finds a goddamn pile of rubble in the corner, and they find a drain underneath it. And that's when they just go, eh, fuck it. Looks like a shortcut to me. And they'll drop into this drain and just start walking.
Yeah, found by Perlman potentially wasting precious water.
Yeah, by potentially precious and or holy water.
Just, you know, on the floor, and it just drains down.
Towards.
So they go through the drain after Perlman potentially wastes precious ambergris.
Definitely. Precious hamburgers.
And they come out onto, you know, a walkway above the tunnel into the machine. And who do we come across but old British mate,
still alive,
being dragged by his shoulder through the tunnel. It's been like 3 fucking weeks and he's still hanging on for dear life.
Yeah.
Hunter, being the all-American hero that he's supposed to be, runs off to save his friend.
Jeopardizing the entire mission.
The whole mission just right out the window for Hunter. Mm. And it's a waste of his time in the end because he gets there and he's... Does he kill him or is he just dead anyway?
Well, he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Do the mission. He just starts going like, what are you doing? Like, and then he's clearly dying and he's got a big ass hole in his shoulder from being dragged by a mutant. So Hunter just pops him in the face and realizes that he's wasted his time and leaves him to die. It's a waste of a scene.
Well, not exactly, because then he's not around for the fight scene that everybody else gets into.
Cut to the group walking perilously across a stone bridge of questionable safety.
After Hunter fucking abandons the mission.
Yeah, Hunter's still sitting with his British dead mate, presumably having a smoke of some description.
Yeah, that scene goes on longer than we... Yeah, led you to believe, but anyway, the rest of the team are walking on an OHS nightmare of
a bridge
scaffolding.
Yeah, it's a stone scaffold.
And what do you reckon happens? Someone fucking falls off.
When Schneider screws the pooch, slips on his foot, and he's hanging by a thread off the bridge.
And they can't leave him because he's got the detonator.
He's got the detonator, which is something that needs to go in the machine that we touched on at the start. Cool-ass monk chick drops down by her ankles with perfect balance and grabs the detonator off him. And then he falls anyway. And we just had a crisis of what to do. We've got another crisis because now Von Schneider's on the floor.
Cannot take this emotional roller coaster.
And they just say, oh, Ron Perlman says, we've got to keep going. And everyone just says, we're still human. And drop down.
Drop down to fight. And it's a terrible, terrible idea.
Yeah.
Cut it short. They get overwhelmed. Von Schneider gets his face burnt off. He looks
by Barrera with a stupid sun gun that thankfully burns him to a goddamn crisp also.
Yeah, he's just been a shit all movie and then he literally just kills. He's team kills.
Yeah.
He is caboose.
Yeah. So now we're left with Perlman,
Duval, Monkchick. That's all we got left fighting. Yeah. Snyder's out because, you know, he's now two-faced.
Burnt to a goddamn crisp. He's two-faced. He's two-facing
two-faced
all over the floor.
Two-facing as a verb. Nice.
He's two-facing it. Anyway, Barrera's gone. Our American man is off on his own, and it's not looking good. And then to top that all off, Perlman eats it. Perlman cops a mutant hand thing straight through the chest.
Destroys the book.
Destroys the book.
This one actually did not expect Perlman to cop it.
Right? Yeah.
Like the only recognizable actor in this movie. You thought plot armor would protect him.
No.
But no.
In Chronicles, you didn't do a lot right. You got me.
You got us on this one.
You got me.
Finally, All-American John McClane Hunter comes back.
Rejoins the group.
Finally shows back up. Just in time to try and put together the pieces of the book that have gone everywhere.
Mm. And finally, we hear the monk chick speak.
And now that she speaks, and we've lost our only defining characteristic,
she becomes completely useless.
Yeah, because
she becomes the most useless sack of crap.
He asks her to read him the book, and she's like, I can't read.
Read her the book that she has devoted herself to. It is her religion.
She can't speak. Can't read. Would like to note that apparently she hasn't spoken. She says it's been longer than she remembers since she spoke. There's no rust, there's no hoarseness, and she's got perfect dictation.
Yeah. So this is where the movie, like you've had an hour and a half of Perlman
bullshit
talking, like, up till this point, and then suddenly it just pop, pop, pop. It just goes through the rest of the movie. Like, suddenly we're pretty much at the machine. We're at the hole. The hole within a hole to the machine.
And they're trying to do some delicate lifting. And
for the second time in the movie, we're being lowered down a hole on a rope.
There's got to be a better way to do it.
There's got to be a better way to do it. The two men who are left
to hold the
manning
rope.
The rope. We've got the two lovely ladies on the rope going down into the machine.
Of course, it goes fuck up.
So Steiner notices some zombies coming, and he does the captain going down with his ship.
And he tops it off with the biggest grenade explosion
which
you've
is the
ever
same,
seen.
The same grenade we've seen three times in this movie.
And we kind of brushed
little,
over it. But
little black butt grenades.
Yeah, we kind of brushed over it. But Wu, in his death scene, also does a final moment grenade thing. And that's a pretty big explosion.
Yeah.
Von Schneider's is at least three times as big.
We got to assume that these grenades are, like, gravity assisted. So the first explosion's above ground that's in the shell.
No, they're like, when you're playing, like, an RPG or something where you can, like, build up your skills with weapons. And you're like, they've just been building up their grenade skill.
So you're not doing anything, but the weapons are getting better.
Yeah.
Oh,
like, the blast radius just gets bigger.
Yeah, he upgraded from nasty-ass potato masher German grenades to the same grenades
to regular frag grenades.
Yeah,
he got
gosh.
There.
So, like,
so
yeah,
he's gone. Two-Face is gone.
The rope's getting a bit slack. Hunter ends up falling into the hole as well. And he is becoming a full-on mutant at this point.
Yeah,
he gets slapped on the conveyor belt.
Gets stabbed with the little injecty thingamabob.
Yeah, it's half his hair burned off for put something in his brain. Like but he does a good old action American hero job of
Fighting his way,
shoots his cuffs off, and rejoins the rest of the cast now at the machine. We're finally here. The whole movie's been leading up to this point.
Hunter walks in. They don't trust him, obviously, because he looks like a freak
now.
The weirdest prove I'm really me scene ever, where he stabs
himself
in the bicep,
and
then he just sucks, not blood, but like the black mutant goo.
Out of his arm,
and
then
spits it out.
Because
that'll prove it.
That's good enough for me, movie.
Well, it's good enough for Duvall and what's-her-face.
At this point in the movie, I'm taking any exit I can.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
We're so close. Yeah,
you did
just
it.
Just keep going.
Get
going. Get to it. And, of course, it's not as straightforward to put the bomb in the hole and blow up the machine as you would hope.
Well, see, it actually is. They just get interrupted. Because in the way that only movies can create clutch moments, like, nine mutants pop out of nowhere.
Not even nine, like, more mutants than they had to fight off in Perlman's death scene.
Right.
And they handle them superbly. Until Duvall loses her knife, her actual sword, has to get a tiny-ass knife, lasts, like, one more mutant
and she,
after that.
Yeah, I was just saying, she rolls her eyes when he gives her the knife. It's like, bitch, you dropped your knife.
That's not my fault.
It's not. You're lucky you're getting a dagger.
Use your hands.
Yeah.
Break off one of the mutant blade arms and use that.
So we're fighting our way through. We're putting the bomb together and then bada bing, bada boom, we get Perlman mutant.
Yep.
Perlman mutant.
So never calling him anything different again.
And of course, Monk Chick struggles with this.
Can't do it. Can't bring herself to kill him.
Can't bring herself
doesn't,
to kill
you know,
him.
The classic, it's not really him anymore.
He's still in there. I can feel it.
Shut up.
Yeah.
It cost you your life.
Yep. They really make out at one point. It's real weird.
Yeah.
They're in real close proximity
to
it.
But in the end, Pearl Mutant kills her.
Yeah.
Jeopardizes the mission even further.
And then we get our last fight with...
And of course, well, before we got that, on the other side, of course, Duval is long gone, fell down the abyss, hit by the giant swinging blades that are below the machine
for
platform.
Some reason.
Yeah.
Cooler fan.
Just cuts her right in half and away she goes.
Yeah. As Monk Chick is falling off the edge, she throws her sword up to the platform, and goddamn if it doesn't land exactly on the blueprint and match the key that we're looking for this entire
time
set the explosion off.
Thank God that happened.
So then we have, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to gloss over it. We fight Pelman.
A relatively brutal fist fight.
Yeah, there's a few
Hunter
good hits in
Pelman.
There. But it's just a lot of Pelman
swinging his big ass
weird hand thing
hand
around.
And his blade.
Yeah.
A lovely running theme from Hellboy. He's got the big ass hand in Hellboy. He's now got a mutant blade on the other hand.
The only note I took about this scene was, you cannot defend against the unstoppable world of Pelman. Because he just keeps swinging.
Just keeps on going. Clay Morrow swinging to the death.
Yeah, gosh. So yeah, Pelman, the end scene.
He's winning,
yeah. Hunter picks up the sword, gives him a few lashes over the back with it, and then stabs him through the chest cavity.
Into the hole.
Into the keyhole.
Sets off the detonation.
Yeah,
huzzah.
Turns
well
the knife.
Done.
And so this is pretty much endgame now, like, we've done the machine. He leans in to mutant Pelman, and Pelman says, "Have faith." Which is just a callback to him being a man of God.
McGee.
Yeah. But in the most literal interpretation of advice ever,
takes a leap of faith
off the edge of the fucking machine,
that
which
just chopped Duval in half.
At this point, it should be full of limbs, full of mutants that aren't really dead, that have just taken a massive fall, because he lands in an ocean.
Yeah, he ends up outside, doesn't he?
He's in a clear stream. This is how he escapes the blast radius. He ends up in a fucking ocean, which should be, like, tearing him limb from limb if the water's moving him that fast. It should just be a riptide.
I'll stop asking these kind of questions about this movie now. We're nearly there.
So we've got the hero out, the thing explodes, that's it. And then, goddamn, if we don't get a closing monologue from Ron Perlman.
We thought we were out.
It's like 30 seconds, but I'll summarise it for you in a few words. He was a dick, but he did good.
Done good. That'll do, pig. That'll do.
And then, as a last slap in the face to everyone watching the movie, we see a ship flying off to Mars. Which is insinuating that Hunter is in the ship. End goal. He could have just gotten on the ship and they could have just...
Well, the ship was, like, in the mutant hole.
But he goes to Mars. The idea is he goes to Mars. Surely, in this age of war,
could have just
gone to Mars and blown up Earth.
There's just a wild-ass theory here on what Perlman's line of have faith. Does he jump off and does he die and he's now passed on to the other life, which is why he ends up in grass.
No, he's not in, because we see a really literal...
Fine. Shoot down my crazy-ass theory.
Don't give this movie any credit. If you give it an inch, it'll take a meter. So that's it. He goes to Mars. The end. He doesn't have any family or anything. We can only assume he gets with the useless British woman.
Well, that's if they don't kill him on sight, because he now looks
like
a
mutant. He's got tar blood.
Did you just create a racist term for the mutants in this movie?
Yeah. Yeah. Filthy tar bloods taking our jobs. All right, so that's the end of our first podcast of B-Movie Buddies. That was Mutant Chronicles. Bertie, what did you think of that movie?
It was certainly a movie. It was not the worst thing you'd ever sit yourself through. I'm not sure I can highly recommend it to people if you have not already seen it, though.
See, because this is our first podcast, we were cheating a bit. We part of the reason we decided to do this podcast
is because we'd already
seen that movie, and we riffed on it super hard while we were watching it.
This could be good for cannon fodder to begin with.
But I've seen this movie twice now. And I think that's two more times than I needed to see this movie ever.
Yeah.
So we're still tossing up ideas for the format of the show, but for now we're going to end on a rating system. Bertie, what do you give this movie?
I'm going to give this movie 2.5 Ron Perlman monologues out of 10.
Only 2.5 because you know that each one goes for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty much the entire length of the movie if you multiply it out. Crowe, what are you giving it?
I give it 1 1/3 filthy tar bloods out of a potential 5 filthy tar bloods. I would sooner go to Mars straight away than sit through another minute of this goddamn movie.
So that was the end of the first B-Movie Buddies podcast. Depending on the time frame that we get this sort of edited and mastered and put up, probably going to aim for approximately a 2 to 3 week schedule.
Yeah.
If we don't get on a roll.
We can't stress enough, don't hold us to anything.
Please don't.
Fortnite is what we're aiming for.
Aiming.
That being said, until we start finding a good way to get ideas for movies, might open a thread or something, next time you hear us, we will have watched
Frankenstein's Army.
A terrible, in my opinion, movie. And
I liked it. So, we're cheating again, people. We've watched this one.
Last time, we promised. There should be good conversation, because we've watched it once and I thought it was a sack of shitty shit.
And I thought it was a slightly better sack of shitty shit.
So until next time, I'm Crowe.
I'm Birdie.
We are the B-Movie Buds. Thank you very much. Bye. Done. All right, welcome to B-Movie Buddies. It's all right.
Off the fly.